This meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee will come to order. The time is 3:18 p.m. on February 2nd. Members present are Representative Carrick, Representative Colomb, Representative Freer, Representative Sadler, Representative Nelson, my co-chair, Representative Fields, and myself, co-chair Hall. We have a quorum. Please silence your cell phones. We're asking that staff and members of the audience not approach the table. If you need to pass a note to community members, please get the attention of my committee aide, Joan Wilkerson, and she will take care of it. I'd like to thank Andrew Magnuson from the Labor and Commerce Committee Secretary and Susan Quigley from the Juno LAO for tech and teleconferencing support. There will be a slight adjustment to our schedule today. We will first hear HB 243, followed by HB 210. The first bill we will hear is HB 243, Barbers, Hairdressers, and Aesthetics Licensing. Representative Carrick and aide Cadence Connor, please take a seat at the front of the room, introduce yourselves for the record, and please maybe remind us what HB 243 is about and any other comments you'd like to share. We also have Kevin McKinley from Fairbanks. He's at the Fairbanks LIO. He's online to help us answer any committee questions. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hall and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, Ashley Carrick, representative for House District 35 in West Fairbanks. And House Bill 243, just for a reintroduction, just simply provides the statutory clarity that the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers may delegate licensing authority to the Division of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensure. And it comes at the request of the Barbers and Hairdressers Board Chair, Kevin McKinley, in Fairbanks, who, as the co-chair mentioned, is online if there are any questions.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we will now open public testimony on this bill. Is there anybody in the room who'd like to testify on HB 243? Seeing none and not seeing any online, we will close public testimony. Are there any final questions for the bill sponsor or for Mr. McKinley? Not seeing any. Thank you, Representative Carrick. My office had set an amendment deadline for Friday, January 30th, and we received no amendments. If it is the will of the committee, Mr. Co-Chair, may I have a motion?
I move to report House Bill 243, Work Order 34-LS1197-A, out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
All right. Hearing no objection, HB 243, Work Order 34-LS1197-A, is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee paperwork. Okay, we are back on record for the House Labor and Commerce Committee. We're now going to move into our first hearing for HB 210, Peace Officers and Firefighters Disability, by the bill sponsor, Representative Kopp, and his aide, Julia O'Connor. Representative Kopp and staff, please take a seat in the front of the room, introduce yourself for the record, and begin your presentation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hall and Fields and members of the committee. Greatly appreciate the opportunity to present this legislation. For the record, my name is Chuck Kopp, House Representative for District 10, and I am accompanied by my team member, Ms. Julia O'Connor. If it's okay with the co-chair, I'll just give an opening statement about the purpose of this bill, why it matters, and then turn it over to Ms. O'Connor to talk about the mechanics of the bill.
Please proceed.
Okay. Before serving in the legislature, I spent my career in Alaska as a police officer and police chief, working shoulder to shoulder with firefighters and EMTs. During that time, I worked alongside a lot of fire crews, commanded incidents, buried friends, and sat with families whose lives were forever changed by a duty-related injury. And this really gets into why this bill matters, because line-of-duty injuries are not hypothetical. They really happen. They happen on traffic stops, during domestic violence calls, structure fires, vehicle extrications, wildland responses, rescues, training. All these things can result in these types of injuries. Police and firefighters know that risk is part of the job. In fact, risk really is the job. That's what you signed up for. But one thing the bill recognizes is that they should not accept financial ruin as part of that risk. And that's what we're looking at here. Under current Alaska law, a permanently disabled police officer or firefighter drops to 40% of gross pay. So when you think about that, that's a 60% pay cut overnight, often with no ability to work elsewhere. And for families already navigating our high cost of living here, that's pretty devastating. What our current law gets wrong is that occupational disability is supposed to be a safety net and not so much of a trap door, which it really is now. 40% of income is really not income replacement. It doesn't cover your mortgage. It doesn't cover medical travel or housing or family obligations. But it does send a message, whether it's intended or not, that once you're hurt, you're on your own. That's not a message I believe we should send to the men and women who run toward danger. So what does House Bill 210 do? It fixes a one-time, well-defined problem. After the first 12 months of occupational disability, the benefits increase from 40% to 75% of gross pay for police officers and firefighters. You do have to requalify every year to show that you are, in fact, disabled and not have to return to work, and unable to return to work. It does not create a windfall, and it doesn't expand these benefits beyond public safety. It doesn't add health care benefits. It simply restores dignity and a livable income after a career-ending injury. On the recruitment and retention issue, something I know we're all focused on, I can speak that, you know, as a police chief, as a supervisor, I was responsible for recruiting and retaining officers for a long time. And I hear the same concerns echoed by fire chiefs. Are younger people coming into the profession today ask real, reasonable, tough questions, which is, what happens if I get hurt? What happens to my family? Why does Alaska offer less protection than other states? Firefighters and police officers can work almost anywhere in the country. They're in high demand, and many states provide upwards of 75% or more for occupational disability. Alaska is competing nationally, and we're losing experienced people to better systems. So this bill just sends a clear signal. We value your service, and we'll stand behind you if you're hurt. It is, I look at it as a moral obligation to those that serve in these jobs, because public safety is not better. It's just different. It's just different. It's not better than another profession, but it is very different. Officers and firefighters cannot refuse dangerous calls. That's what the job is. They don't choose the conditions, the fire behavior, or the violence level. So the risk is inherent. And when someone is permanently disabled in the line of duty, they have already paid the price. House Bill 210 doesn't elevate them. It just makes sure they're not abandoned. We believe it's fiscally responsible. The occupational disability trust funds are strongly overfunded. It's a measured, predictable adjustment, not an open-ended liability. And from an operational standpoint, the cost of vacancies, overtime, burnout, and turnover is far greater than the cost of doing this right. So just wrapping it up and turning it over to Ms. O'Connor here, I would say that more than anything, this bill is about trust, trust between the state and the officers and firefighters who protect our communities. Trust that if you're doing exactly what Alaska asked you to do, your family will not be pushed into financial crisis. The bill doesn't ask for special treatment, just for fair treatment. It sends a clear message to today's first responders and tomorrow's recruits. You protect Alaska, and Alaska will protect you. Thank you, Co-Chair Hall and Fields, and I will now turn it over to Ms. O'Connor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hall, Chair Fields, and the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Julia O'Connor, staff to Representative Kopp. Like my boss said, HB 210 updates Alaska occupational disability benefit for peace officers and firefighters who are permanently injured in the line of duty. The bill ensures injured public safety servants are not pushed into poverty and do not lose their retirement security. Under the current system for PERS, Public Employee Retirement System, and TERS, Teacher Retirement System, disability coverage varies by tier. Defined contribution members, PERS Tier 4 and TERS Tier 3, are eligible only for occupational disability benefits and do not receive non-occupational disability or health care coverage during their disability period. HB 210 works within this existing framework by improving the benefit level for the limited group the system already serves. Under the current law, an occupationally disabled peace officer or firefighter receives just 40% of their gross salary at the time of separation, 60% pay cut. For families already dealing with medical and recovery costs, this income reduction creates real financial pressure and does not reflect the higher risk nature of the job. HB 210 increases occupational disability for all public servants, all public safety servants, and all PERS tiers from 40 to 75% of salary after the first 12 months of disability. Together, this change provides stability, dignity, and a realistic chance for injured workers to maintain a basic standard of living. To help accurately show the impact, a firefighter earning $6,000 per month becomes permanently disabled. The proposed increase results in about $25,000 in additional annual support after the first year. That amount can help make meaningful difference in maintaining basic household stability. HB 210 is a targeted, responsible improvement that addresses the most urgent gap affecting public safety workers. HB 210 does not solve every problem in Alaska's retirement system, but it does address a clear inequity using resources that already exist. This is fairness, safety, and a workforce stability bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hall, and we'll available for any questions.
Great. I think first we'll turn to invited testimony before turning to committee member questions. I am not seeing Chief Schrage in the room, so we will turn to Sergeant Darrell Evans, President of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. He is online. Sergeant Evans, will you please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
Good afternoon, members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. Thank you for allowing me this time to speak. My name is Darrell Evans. I am the president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, or APDEA, representing the nearly 400 police officers of the Anchorage Police Department. I'm speaking on behalf of the APDEA today in strong support of House Bill 210. I am also a police sergeant with over 31 years of law enforcement experience in the state of Alaska. Alaska presents uniquely dangerous and adverse working conditions to include dangerously cold temperatures, hazardous driving conditions, unpredictable and dangerous large animals, and unforgiving terrain and waterways. All of this in addition to the inherent risks and dangers already associated with law enforcement. The dangers involved in dealing with the most dangerous and violent offenders in society and the unpredictability of human behavior. In my 30-plus years as a police officer, I have suffered several injuries that luckily were not severe enough to threaten my career, but I have faced armed suspects, been involved in serious car crashes, and assisted with rescue operations in dangerous conditions. I have worked with several colleagues throughout the years who were not as lucky as I have been. Some of these officers have been involved in career-ending car crashes. Some have blown out knees while fighting with dangerous suspects. And a few have even been shot and wounded to the point that they have been unable to return to duty. For those peace officers and firefighters that are forced to leave their chosen profession sooner than they or their families had ever planned, I thank Representative Kopp for sponsoring HB 210. And I thank you, members of this committee, for having the conversation and considering this bill that honors the sacrifices made by our peace officers and firefighters while serving the state of Alaska. HB 210 provides an improved benefit structure that shows the state of Alaska will stand behind these honorable men and women when they need it the most. Thank you again for your time today.
Thank you, Sergeant Evans. Do committee members have any questions for Sergeant Evans? Representative Carrick? No? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Sergeant Evans. Next, excuse me.
If we're going to be hearing all the presentations, I might like to have the invited testifiers available for questions later once we hear all the things. If we're going to listen to all of it, yeah, we'll come back to questions. Let's do that.
Yes. Point well taken, Representative Sadler. Sergeant Evans, do you have time to stay on the line and answer additional questions that may come up?
I do. Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Next, we will turn to Chief Sean Case with the Anchorage Police Department. Chief Case, would you please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, co-chairs Fields and Hall and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 210, an act related to occupational disability benefits for police officers and firefighters. My name is Sean Case, and I serve as the Chief of Police for the Anchorage Police Department. And I'm here to express my strong support for this legislation, which recognizes the unique risks and sacrifices made by Alaska's first responders. Every day, Alaska's peace officers and firefighters face physical dangers, psychological stress, and unpredictable hazards in service to our communities. When one of our officers or firefighters becomes permanently disabled in the line of duty, their ability to provide for their families should not be compromised. Under the current law, the 40% disability benefit often falls short of meeting basic living expenses. This gap can force disabled first responders and their families into financial hardship at a time when they are already coping with life-changing injuries or trauma. House Bill 210 corrects this inequity, providing a fair and substantial, sustainable level of support that reflects the true cost of living and value to the service rendered. This legislation will also strengthen recruitment and retention within Alaska's public safety workforce. Men and women considering a career in law enforcement or firefighting weigh the risks they face against the security provided to them and their families. HB 210 sends a clear message. The state of Alaska stands behind those who serve and will not abandon them if they are injured protecting others. In closing, House Bill 210 is not just about numbers. It's about values. It's about honoring the commitment of those who run towards danger when others run away. It's about ensuring that if tragedy strikes, our first responders and their families are not left behind. I urge the committee to advance House Bill 210 and to continue supporting Alaska's peace officers and firefighters who dedicate their lives to keeping our communities safe. Thank you for your time and consideration. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Chief Case. Do any committee members have questions for the chief? Representative Co-Chair Fields.
Thanks to the chair, Chief Case. Just checking in on current vacancies at APD, and thank you for being here today. Is it still around 75?
Yes, current vacancies at the Anchorage Police Department is 36, and we have an additional 48 officers that are in training, either field training or in the academy. In June, our upcoming academy, we will nearly have all of our positions that we have funded filled.
Wow. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Case. Not seeing additional questions from the committee. Do any committee members have questions for Representative Kopp? Representative Carrick, Representative Sadler, Representative Colon.
Thank you, through the co-chair. Thank you for bringing this bill, Representative Kopp, and to the invited testifiers. Also, thank you for sharing. I saw that there's an indeterminate fiscal note, and I just was curious. One, is this bill retroactive to folks who have already been injured on the job? Could they potentially apply in some way for the increase in benefits based on when they were injured? And also, because there's an indeterminate fiscal note, do we have any kind of sense of how many people this might apply to year, for example?
Through the chair, Representative Carrick. So, I mean, the legislature could structure it that way. As it is now, the effective date would be people coming into the disability status as of that date. It could be structured differently to be retroactive. As far as your question, how many would it apply to? Talking with the DPS, Department of Public Safety, and various public safety leaders around the state, we're talking about a handful of people, like less than 10, that are currently in a career-ending injury status. Traumatic brain injury is two or three of those. Their spinal injuries, neck injuries. And remember that disability can also, particularly in the firefighting profession, can also be a job-related disability directly to chemical exposure. It more commonly happens to firefighters than it does to police officers. So it can be for a variety of reasons where you are moving to a disability status. But it's a handful. I think that DRB could probably tell it because they would know how many people are in a disability status, but it's not a large number.
Okay. One other
just
question.
Real quick, I just want to make a note for the committee that we have Brandon Roomsburg online. He's the retirement manager of the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the co-chair. I just had one other question, too, and thank you for that answer. Does the bill also include correctional officers under peace officers?
I don't believe it does.
Okay.
I could be mistaken, but I will get back to the committee on that one. That's a good question, Representative Carrick. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Next, we'll turn to Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the sponsor bringing the bill forward. And hearing from the Chief of Police and the firefighters about this. There's a lot of intricacies about the disability and retirement benefits in public safety folks, different tranches, different tiers, different circumstances. So it's going to take some time to understand how this would actually play through. But I'm going to start with a general question or two. Is this about firefighters or police officers who are permanently end their career because of a work-related disability or temporary or both?
Yes, so through the chair, Representative Sadler, the determination is made on an annual review, so you never get like an evaluation that says you're permanently disabled. If you're on disability, you have to have a medical panel go through a review process every year to basically requalify you for disability benefits. So it would apply as long as someone meets that disability benefit standard set by a medical evaluation team.
Okay, and through the chair, that's kind of where I begin to see the intricacies here. I would probably need to look for the Division of Voc Rehab, what percentage of people who go on year-by-year disability, well, it's called termination, come off of that, and how much is called temporary. So that's one. I guess I'm going to have to ask some questions and do some math about what this is going to mean to individuals. I certainly want to. We do have many laws and programs that benefit our public safety officers, retirement, and health insurance coverage, and so forth. But I guess I have to ask questions about. Well, again, I guess how many people, what percentage of the workforce in law enforcement and firefighters are disabled, and what their benefits are. There's some of the background supporting testimony indicates people would like to have. Disability coverage for non-work-related injuries. Is that your intent? It's a rather simple bill right now, but the case is made strongly in the ample testimony here that is something people in the law enforcement and firefighters' businesses would like to have. Is that your intent to go there?
Through the co-chair Hall, Representative Sadler. So the point is well taken. When we went from the legacy retirement tiers to the defined contribution, we dropped all the non-occupational disability and health care. That's unfortunate because 85% of career-ending injuries happen off-duty. 85%. So 85% already of disabilities, this bill does not touch. It does not go there. It stays with the structure of the plan we have, talking about work-related injuries only. Yes, there are plenty of people that would love to not be worried about falling in their driveway off duty. But no, this bill doesn't address that. We, in fact, referred to the committee notes way back in 2005 and found legislative testimony that they intended to address this. They were aware that they were doing away with a non-occupational disability and decided they would address it later. It was never addressed. So I'm sure you probably did get correspondence on that. But this bill, again, only deals with the structure that we have now, which is duty-related disability benefits.
So as to whether we're likely to see that, you're going to come up with a bill or an amendment to do that, I'm not quite sure if I know. I hear what you're saying. Your inclination would be to do so. Is that correct?
My inclination is to stay with the structure of this bill.
Good. So you don't intend to bring that forward. Good. Glad to hear. Another question, Chair. And looking at some of the details, as I say, some of the details of the program, somebody who is on disability year to year under the current 40% calculation, their families, their dependents up to age 23 if the kids are in school, still receive full free medical coverage even at the 40% rate when they're. Is that correct?
Through the chair, no. Not under disability benefits, you don't. What you are talking about is line-of-duty deaths.
Uh-huh.
And line-of-duty deaths, by executive order, Governor Walker did this, and I believe that also Governor Parnell extended the benefit of the state to cover uninsured families and possibly education benefits for children. Now, federally, there is a federal program for firefighters and police officers who die in the line of duty that is more life insurance related, but the educational benefit, that sounds like that was probably an executive decision to cover families.
And last point.
Representative Sadler, pause for a moment. We're going to turn to Representative Coulomb and her question. We'll come back to you.
Sure, thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, thank you, Representative Kopp, for bringing this forward. So I'm just trying to figure out the mechanics of this. So if this were to increase to 75%, this is, so we know the employer contribution is capped at 22%. This is going to fall on the state on the PERS program, right? That's why you brought up the overfunding.
Yes, so it's actually the disability trust. It's a separate fund that is responsible to pay these disability payments, and that trust is significantly overfunded right now, which is why we believe this is just not going to and there's such a small handful of career-ending injuries that are out there right now. But you're right in that it's under the umbrella of the retirement system that the benefit is paid, but they have a separate trust just dedicated for this, which is significantly overfunded.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
So how's the trust funded? Where does the money for that come from?
It comes from the payments every month that come out of the employer-employee contributions. There's a disability payment. The DRB could say what that is. But, yeah, it's funded monthly.
Okay. And the follow-up?
Follow-up.
So on the slide, when you said PERS and TERS were way overfunded, was that referring to the trust or just – because my understanding it was – I know it's overfunded, but I think it's just a health portion that was overfunded on
PERS. The disability – through the chair, the disability trust, Representative Coulomb, is also overfunded.
Okay. And follow-up?
Follow-up.
And we don't know how much. All right. Can you find out how much?
Julie O'Connor, for PERS Tier 4, the Disability Trust Fund is 399% funded, and for TERS, it is 5,172% funded.
Okay, and follow-up?
Follow-up.
So I'm just wondering, because so kind of like the unemployment insurance, when you have a fund that's overfunded, you know, that's good. I think it's a great idea to use it for this. I just didn't know how overfunded and when is it start to reverse the other way. Now we're getting too many funds to go out. But it sounds like there's not that many people that right now would be under your bill.
Through the chair, Representative Coulomb, yes, thank God, right?
Yeah.
But it's a small number. And obviously DRB should speak to this or some with disability trust, but we do not see it impacting the fund negatively. Yeah.
And can I have one more question?
Real quick, do you want to bring on Mr. Roomsburg with the DRB? Mr. Roomsburg, do you have any clarity that you can provide on this conversation? Please put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, through the chair. This is Brandon Roomsburg, retirement manager with the state of Alaska. I would have to get with Christopher Nobel, our chief financial officer, to speak to the health of the disability trust. So I would be able to follow up with you shortly after this meeting, if that's possible.
That would be great. Thank you very much, Mr. Roomsburg.
Okay, I'll just do one. Yep, one
Representative
more
Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. My other question is, so we always hear that we lose firefighters and police officers to Washington State. And what is the 40% that we provide really low? And do other states, is 75% kind of the standard and we're just low? Or do you have any context of what other states are doing?
Through the chair, Representative Cologne. So, yeah, to answer your question, this bill isn't really about the retirement system and how competitive we are. It's just about disability benefits. And so narrowly addressing disability benefits, because our retirement system is what it is, a 401k and no Social Security, this is just one small thing that we can do to show an investment in people who are in a high-risk vocation. Mm-hmm. And as far as how do other states fund disability, yes, it's in the committee packet, I believe. Okay. It's titled Other States Occupational Benefits. Perfect. And it just gives a rundown of what other states are doing. So we're definitely at the bottom, at the very lowest that we could find of any state. Most states are anywhere between, 50 to 75. And of course, our cost of living is higher pretty much than all those states. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. Yeah, I had a very similar question, namely, who would be an actuary who monitors the occupational disability fund, who could speak to why this is sustainable, just so we have that on the record. And maybe that is, I guess it's not Mr. Roomsburg, but just be nice to hear that. So when people ask, we can say, yes, in fact, we did hear that. Thank you.
Agree. Yeah. Thank you, Representative Fields. Representative Sadler.
Thank you very much. Actually, through the chair to your staffer, Representative Kopp, I've heard the percentages, 399% overfunded, 5,127% overfunded. I would love to hear the raw numbers on those, if I may, please.
Julie O'Connor, this is for the Defined Contribution Retirement Disability Trust. And by raw numbers, for PERS Tier 4, 399%, and TERS Tier 3, 5,172%. And in the packet, if I may, we provided a recent ARM board resolution that has great information about the current occupational and non-occupational disability background, which is pretty fascinating. It goes quite in depth.
Follow up.
Thank you. Follow up. Yeah, I did catch the percentages, but do you have the raw numbers? The amount, if the PERS for DC Retirement Disability Trust is 399% overfunded, what is the balance? That 399% represents how much money?
Julie O'Connor, I do not know, but I'm happy to get that for you.
Please, for both of those as well. Thank you.
One more. Are there any other questions from the committee other than Representative Sadler?
I did have one other.
Representative Cologne. We'll come back to you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I was wondering if the EMS workers are included in this.
Only if they're classified as a local government PERS public safety employee. Okay. So there are a lot of EMS people that are outside of that context. Okay. But if they were inside that, then they would apply. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
They're looking at the blue sheet here from the Division of Retirement Benefits about occupational disability benefits. That's one for the record. There's a point that says that generally PERS occupational disability benefits are not considered taxable if your benefit is calculated at 40% of your gross monthly salary. Would the additional from 40 to 75% delta be taxable? Do you know, Representative Kopp?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm not sure what the IRS rule is. Okay. I'm sure there's a special ruling on disability benefits and when it becomes taxable or not. As we saw in the previous slide here on the amount that's actually coming in, this would be based on a $6,000 a month. So this bill would go from $2,400 a month to $4,500 a month. And that puts you in probably a 15% tax bracket, but when you, if you're married, file in jointly and you get your deduction, you're probably not paying much at that amount. Yeah.
Follow up.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Through the chair, could the sponsor tell me $6,000 a month is $72,000 a year, roughly. Is that a starting site firefighter wage? Is that someone who's been at it for 5 years or 10 years? What do firefighters and police officers generally make? Is $72,000 an average or a median? Or?
Yeah, so this is just an example we threw up just to get your head around a number. Firefighters and police officers in Alaska have a significant salary range, as do teachers, depending on who the employer is and where they're at. But a starting officer salary can be in the 50s to a starting salary that's close to 100, depending on what your department is and where you're working. But this $6,000 a month is a good idea of an average for a public safety person in Alaska, and just showing how the disability benefit would impact the monthly benefit, just using it as an average, yeah.
Okay. So it is an average, you're saying? Okay.
Right. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the co-chair. I really appreciate the list of other states and their percentages, and I'm just wondering how this legislation came out at 75% as opposed to Anchorage Police and Fire is listed on here for two of their plans. It's at 50%, and then another is 66%. Sounds like we have plenty of fund capitalization for 75%, but just curious how we came to that number.
Yeah, so just looking at the age of those plans and how long ago those rates were set and what's happened to inflation and energy and housing and transportation costs now, and looking at what other states are doing comparatively to what our dollar will buy in Alaska compared to those states, is kind of how we landed at 7. There was no magic to it, just where we thought we should be. In fact, even as long as we've been at 40%, if we just kept up with inflation, we'd be pretty close to this number now.
And just a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, through the co-chair. It would be really great to see Washington's number specifically, since as Representative Cologne mentioned, we do often get compared to Washington in terms of benefit competitiveness. So it'd be really great to get that number and have that comparison.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Carrick. So we'll put together a committee memo as the follow-up. And, yeah, and there's been several really good questions raised, and we'll get back. Yeah.
Do at least 5 to 10% higher than what Washington is doing.
Right. Got to be more competitive. That's right.
All right. Additional questions from the committee?
Thank you. Thank you. And through the chair,
Representative Sadler.
Again, I'll say that the systems are complicated, and I look forward to digging into it. But I am looking at this document here, the occupational disability benefits. It does say you, your spouse, your dependent children are eligible for major medical coverage at no cost to you as long as you're receiving disability benefits. I just want to clarify if that's accurate, because I thought I heard you say that was not the case.
Yeah, so the medical coverage is if you're hurt on duty. It does not apply if it's a non-occupational disability. Mm-hmm. And we're not getting into that, even though 85% of disabilities actually are not duty-related. But, again, anything else?
And for the record, Julia O'Connor, defined benefit retirement systems, they do have health care provided. It is the defined contribution that do not have health care provided.
And most of our employees, through the chair, are in the defined contribution program, so there is no health care. Yeah.
And as I say, there are nuances here that I need to pick through to make sure I'm making the proper conclusions. Thank you.
All right. Additional questions from the committee for Representative Kopp or his staff? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for all those who provided invited testimony today. We certainly appreciate your perspectives. Thank you very much, Representative Kopp and Ms. O'Connor. Really appreciate you guys being here. We are going to hold this bill over and discuss it again at our next or earliest opportunity. This will conclude our business for today. The House Labor and Commerce Committee will meet next on Wednesday, February 4th at 3:15 p.m. This meeting is adjourned at 4 p.m.
Thank you.